It's time for the report card with the professor.
The report card is the day where we grade the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do, whether it's going to be a coach, whether it's going to be somebody in the sports limelight, whether it's going to be a player, whether it's going to be something that is going to be very intelligent or not intelligent. And of course, we just attach a grade to it. That's the report card. So, Maura, what do we got?
Well, we touched on this yesterday, Professor. The two Fox Sports Detroit Tigers announcers that got into a physical altercation after they've done over a decade of work together. The new details coming out are that Rod Allen choked Mario Empemba from behind after a disagreement over a chair in the broadcast.
A disagreement over a chair?
Yes, but you have to hear Danny Dave and Moore's reaction to it. Wyman talking about what he'll do this weekend is the best.
Allegedly, I guess there's a report, I'm seeing it right now, from WDIV, choked Mario Empemba.
It was over something to do with a chair in the broadcast booth.
No way. They fought over a chair?
They've worked together for 16 years.
You know what? I'm going to threaten Rabel. I'm going to tell him, hey, you saw what happened in Detroit? That can happen in Seattle. Mess with my chair.
Unbelievable. I mean, isn't that insane? I mean,
Rabel has to watch out now. Wyman's going to get him.
Let's put it this way. Wyman's got to go through me first. Because I'll get there a little bit earlier than just about everybody, because I usually get to the press box pretty early. So it's like, I've got Rabel's back and he can't do it. And we've got to confirm this, Maura. Was the argument over, were they arguing over Russell Wilson? I mean, one guy thought Russell's good and the other one thought he should be criticized more. Could that have been one of the reasons they got into a fight, kind of like Sherman and Bennett?
I don't think that was it. Apparently, it was much more simple than that. Two grown men fighting over a chair.
I think we also get to the bottom of what happened in the Mariner clubhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like they got into a fight because it was all about Russell Wilson.
Have you ever seen anyone fight in the booth before?
Seen it? No. Heard about it? Yes.
I mean, I guess an altercation happened while we were on radio row at the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We saw the aftermath of that. One of the Houston stations when, I guess, one of the shock jock type sports guys, got into it and, got into it the other station. So, yeah. I mean, it does happen. I mean, I think it happens more probably in radio stations than it does in a clubhouse. But because, you've got all the egos that are on the air and all that stuff. So, yeah, it does happen. So I think, again, we have to continue to give a D to these two guys and maybe take it to an F. If you're fighting over a chair, that's just simply ridiculous.
I agree. Next up, we have Richard Sherman speaking out, saying that he believes that there will be a holdout. During the next CBA negotiations, he says it's going to happen, so it's not like guys are guessing, because there was a lockout before. We don't plan on changing anything about the deal we currently have now. I don't think it's going to be negotiated before the end of the CBA.
I mean, I tend to it. I mean, I'll give him an A+ because, again, I think he's hitting on the head. Now, the question is, what's a lockout going to do if the players aren't going to strike and try to get the best they can? So I think that that's still going to be very much in question and where that's going to be. So in the end, I think it's a kind of easy evaluation to see that's probably the way this thing is going to be going. I think that it's very astute. I mean, I think he's going to be one of the ones involved in the negotiations, which is fine for me because then I get to talk to him about all those things. So I'll give him an A+ on that.
All right. The next story here, Oakland Athletics relief pitcher Sean Kelly is now day-to-day with a cut on his thumb on his right pitching hand. He said he nearly cut the tip of his thumb off when washing a sharp knife last Friday and joked that this is why you shouldn't wash dishes.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I can understand that to a certain degree, but it's like, they have dishwashers now. I mean, I don't know if you really are doing that. So, he can't afford to do this because now, like the Tampa Bay Rays, the A's are bullpenning. I mean, they're taking guys which are not going over well with the team because they lost the two games that they bullpened. And so, if a reliever is going to be almost cutting his hand off, like doing something like that, then I think that, you're hurting the team. So I have to think we have to give him a D for dish on that.
Okay, Professor. Next up, we have 20-year-old Naomi Osaka, who beat Madison Keys in a U.S. Open final yesterday. She advances to her first Grand Slam final, where she will face Serena Williams, who is one of her heroes, and you can clearly hear that when the announcer asked her about it.
And perhaps, given how much it was in your mind and how much you said you wanted it, a message to Serena.
I love you.
Do you question her ability to come out and compete and have her whole head in the game when
she's
her
done.
Message to Serena is, I love you.
Yeah, it's over. I mean, got no chance in this one. So I think that, we'll give her a C because it's like, can you tip off you're going against the most ruthless, one of the best women athletes you've ever gone against, the most competitive, and now you're almost making the yips going into this thing. So I give her a C-, and I don't give her much of a chance to be able to do anything in this battle. Serena's going to kind of go on and just round this out and get a big victory.
Yeah, 20 years old, having to play someone you've grown up idolizing that's just playing phenomenally right now, that's pretty intimidating.
Yeah, I would have to think so, because, you just don't give her much of a shot. And, boy, it's amazing how Serena has come back, isn't it? I know my wife Pat is watching it just about every day. I mean, she's out there, pulling to make sure that Serena gets in, because I think she enjoys that so much. And, I know that, big fan, she's a big fan of Rafael Nadal, and is trying to, who's going to try to be getting that victory again. So, yeah, it's kind of fun. But, man, it was so hot there for a while in the Open.
Yeah, they said they were struggling with the humidity there as well. It was kind of affecting some of the competitors that weren't used to it. I think even just in the way the ball was moving, but it's been fun watching two of the best be back at the top there.
No question. What else do we have?
The Eagles fans, 2 hours or so after they raised the championship banner, were booing their team last night, Professor.
Really?
That's pretty standard for them, I guess. Yeah, that first half was a little bit ugly, and they just they picked it right back up. Doesn't matter if you won him a Super Bowl a few months ago or not.
Welcome to Philly. It's like I still remember Ron Jaworski talking about the days when they really struggled, and the fans would get batteries and would throw them out there. There's no doubt that they can be some of the toughest fans that you've ever seen. They are really amazing in how they're able to turn on a dime and try to go after their guys when they're not playing good on the field. I guess that's not a surprise, and so I guess we have to give it a B because it's just part of the practice. If you don't do well in Philly, you can come back, you can celebrate a championship, but if you only throw for 117 yards passing in a game that it took you to the final 3 minutes to be able to win, I mean, you're going to get the wrath of the fans. And remember, this is a fan group that booed Santa Claus.
Very true. Well, one thing that they did right that the fans liked was another trick play. A lot of people thought it was the Philly special all over again. It was a 3rd and 5 from the Falcons 41. Midway through the third quarter, Nelson Aguilar came around on a reverse, lofted it to Foles for a 15-yard gain. And Peterson said that was not the Philly special. It was actually something that they picked up from their Super Bowl competition.
Well, it was a play we had put in for this week. It was a play that was in our third down menu. We were on the correct hash mark, and it was the right time of the game.
What do you call it?
Philly, Philly. What's the play?
Philly was appeared to be the exact same play New England ran against you guys in the Super Bowl unsuccessfully. Are you aware of that?
That's where we got it from. We just put different people in the game.
The pitch was the difference?
Yeah, and yeah. They were in 11 personnel, I think, and we were in 12.
Don't you love Peterson? I mean, he is an absolute beauty. So let's give him an A-. I mean, he's so creative. I mean, he's able to take plays. He's able to diagnose all these different things. I mean, he's so good at all this stuff. I think that I truly respect where he is as a coach and what he does, all that. So, I'll give him an A on that one.
Their execution on that play was flawless. It definitely looked like they had been practicing and practicing it well.
Are we surprised? I don't think so.
But then Lane Johnson, of course, had to get his Patriot shot in when they asked him about it. He said, yeah, you remember the one that Tom Brady dropped?
Mm-hmm. By the way, I thought that was the silliest call I could ever imagine. And again, here's where the difference is. It's like, okay, if you're going to be Doug Peterson and you're calling it for a quarterback who's, in his 20s, I think I would have to think still that, he's still in his 20s, but not to a quarterback who's 40 years old.
Yeah, that didn't,
that didn't go
so well.
Horrible.
And
I mean,
one that's like, never been known for his speed, even in his heyday. Nick Foles is 29.
Yeah, he's 29 years old. So Nick Foles, you know, getting a pass like that, that's understandable. But to throw one to a 40-year-old Tom Brady, that was silly. I mean, again, that's Joshy Boy McDaniels trying to be a little bit too cute, and they paid a price for it. Last I checked, I mean, sorry to say this, but they lost that game. Sorry.
Very much so. It's fine.
Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will take your text questions. So text us 710-710, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And, of course, it's time right now to take your text questions. More news in the National Football League. Eric Berry has not practiced all week with a heel injury. Looks like he's going to be a scratch for the Kansas City Chiefs. As we mentioned, Eddie Goldman, of course, getting a four-year extension at, about $10.5 million a year. That deal is now done. Then, four years, $42 million. And then Keanu Neal, safety for the Atlanta Falcons, blew out his ACL last night for the Falcons, and so he's done for the season. So they lose a quality safety in their first game. But text questions 710-710. Maura, what do we got?
253 says, if Wilson throws for 200 plus yards and Carson rushes for 100, would you guarantee a Hawks victory this weekend?
Okay, I think if, let's put it this way, if they get a running back and gets 100 yards, yeah, they're going to win, because that's going to be the key. Because the way I look at it, they need about 1,800 yards to improve their points differential. And if they can get that, and again, a 1,000 yard season out of any back, that would help. Without question, if they can get a good performance and that, I think all those things can come together and they can get the win. Offense has to carry the defense for the early part of the season.
All right, the 253 says, I don't see why people have such a problem with Wilson. He seems like a great guy, and the other top five quarterbacks in the league don't ever seem to have to deal with the same issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, sometimes you may not have the total support of all your players. Again, I still use Ben Roethlisberger, and I'm sure there's guys that have some resentment about Tom Brady. But you know, the key is, if your quarterback wins, everything resolves itself. And I think, you know, you can see that Russell Wilson usually wins. And there's no question, he's a great guy. I mean, go see him every Tuesday when he's at hospitals helping out people and, you know, doing all the charity stuff that he does. He's, you know, very involved in so many things, but it's also involved in preparation for the team. And so, no, he's a great guy. And, you know, I guess this team and several players on this team wanted to win so badly that even if something would go wrong with their quarterback, they'd turn on the quarterback. And so there was guys in this team that did turn on Russell Wilson, and that's just a shame.
To your comments earlier about New England throwing to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl being a bad move, the 253 says, hey, Professor, so New England throwing it to Tom Brady, would that be a silly?
What, New England throwing it to Tom Brady? Yes.
Instead of Philly.
Oh, yeah, be silly. That's great. I like that. Pretty good line.
The 253 says, I love talking about the Hawks, but with the M season coming to an end, how big is this Yankees series? Is it a must sweep?
I can't imagine them getting a sweep, but I think it's a must. They got to win the series because, again, you keep falling behind the A's. You're now running out of time. I mean, just a little bit more than 20 games remaining, and so you've got to try to, you know, start winning, moving ahead, not moving forward. And what they've now been, what, 5.5 games behind now for, what, a week and a half or so? Is it 2 weeks? They haven't gained any ground. And, you know, I know that they have some easier games coming up. I mean, one of the killers was getting swept by the San Diego Padres. I mean, you know, they needed a sweep against Baltimore. I was, you know, there. Here's examples of some of the worst teams in the league. And, you know, you don't, I mean, you go 2-3. And so, no, they've got to make up ground against the Yankees. And so I think it's vital that they win 2 out of 3. But I can't imagine against the Yankees they're going to get a sweep.
The 425 says, where does it put Le'Veon Bell if the Pittsburgh O-line makes backup James Conner into a 1,000-yard rushing back?
Makes him probably 9-10 win team, because they need more than just 1,000 yards. I mean, they need more than 62.5 yards a game from their running back, and they're not going to get the pass-catching ability that Bell has. And so now you see a dramatic drop-off in the offense, you know, an offense that has hopes of getting to 30 points with their wide receivers and all the things that they have at tight end. And, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, now if you're talking a 1,000-yard runner, they're now fighting for a wild card, not trying to win a division.
Well, I think that they're asking if it devalues Bell at all, like that another another running back would come in and do well behind that offensive line if it makes him look a little less valuable.
Yeah, but again, it would have. I mean, the only way it would make him look less valuable is if they would have a 1,200, 13 yard season out of Connor. 1,000 yards isn't going to do anything. I mean, all it's going to prove to the Bell is that how valuable he is, but it's going to pull down their chances to win. I mean, they need, you know, more out of the running game, and they go from one of the top two running backs in the league to a 1,000-yard runner. I know there's only 9,000-yard runners in the league last year, but they need more from the backs than just 1,000 yards. And so I don't think, and again, it's a great offensive line, no question about it. And you can see the offensive line right now is furious with this silly holdout of his and taking into the season. But in the end, it's one where it's like, you know, this is his decision. But, you know, they're not going to be the same without Le'Veon Bell, no question.
509 says, John, with the two horrible catch calls last night, who has the last word on the catch? The head ref on the field or the replay booth that they talk to?
Ref on the field. He has the ultimate determination, but now they can consult if there's time. Because now there's more communication coming out of New York in each given year. But you know, ultimately, it's going to be the referee. He has to take responsibility for the calls. And you know, he can have some guidance and all that stuff. But it just shows you, it's like, hey, they continue to screw it up. And, you know, I still go back to the premise. It's like, okay, hands, you know, look at that catch if you can remember it. Okay, hands, ball was in hand, feet on the ground. Okay, all the feet were on the ground because he was completely on his back and the ball was still in his hand. How can you not call that a completion? Because they always wanted to use the and make a football move and do this and do that. And it's like, they just blew it. Stop with the and. Two things, ball in hand, feet on ground.
I know.
Lean, and let's put that, and then lean toward the catch and not the non-catch.
Yeah. 808 says, Bennett didn't look amazing. Still a good call to let him go?
I think it was time more than anything else. Again, if you're going to be doing a reset like this team is doing, again, it would have been greater if they can get more value for him. But, I mean, he was out there, I think it was for 46 plays. I think he had one tackle behind the line of scrimmage and all that. But, you know, say what you want. I mean, he was in a mix that held Atlanta to 12 points, and so he did some good things. But I think it was just time to move on.
Right, the 206 apparently had the same rough night that I did last night, starting Matt Ryan in fantasy. They want to know if he's still a solid start.
I guess so. Oh, no, he's a solid start because you're talking about, you know, one of the 7 or 8 or 9 best quarterbacks in the league, and you look at this wide receivers. But again, I mean, listen, I like Steve Sarkisian a lot. This is 17 games. I haven't seen it. I have not seen good play calling, and particularly when they get into the red zone. When you keep doing the same thing over and over, you know, for example, how many times did they not look? And again, this is not Matt Ryan. He's calling the plays, but they purposely wanted to put Julio Jones on the one side just to draw extra coverage, and then they try to get it to the other side, and it doesn't work. I mean, they're 1 for 20. 1 for 20 in the red zone.
Completely incapable of getting the ball to Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and you know, and the running game. Where was the running game? I mean, you know, Devontae Freeman's the third highest paid running back in the league at $8.25 million, and he's really good. And you know, they've got, you know, a great backup in Tevin Coleman. Run the ball. And again, the problem that they face is that they don't establish the run inside the goal line. I mean, that's one thing that you need to do. I mean, if you're going to be, you know, just hitting the hole, try to establish the run. They haven't done it now, and this is now going into the second year.
Well, yeah, and Sarkisian's problem is that we saw what Freeman and Coleman could do together and, mm-hmm. and what this offense could look like when it's functioning well with Shanahan.
No doubt.
And so seeing the stark contrast, it's kind of mind-blowing.
I just shake my head. It's crazy.
Yes, well, that's it for text today. We got to get to Tyler Plumbus here.
No, coming up next, we're going to get a preview of the Denver Broncos. Tyler Plumbus will join us. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us on the Venue Kings hotline is Tyler Plumbus. Used to play here in the National Football League, now doing great radio in Denver. And so, okay, let's get a preview of the Broncos because I think it's a team that's talented. It's got a new quarterback in Case Keenum. It's a team that's now got two great edge rushers in Brandon Chubb and Von Miller. I mean, from what you've seen, Tyler, how good is this team?
Well, I guess that's a great question that we're all very eager to figure out. You know, they're improved, I'll tell you that much, but that's not saying a whole lot. They weren't very good last year. Training camp was really encouraging, and it all started with Case Keenum. I'll full on admit that when the Broncos signed Case Keenum, I was rather lukewarm on the signing, but I was out there for every day of training camp, obviously throughout the preseason at the games and everything, and he's looked like everything and more as advertised. In the games, he hasn't played very much, so might not have looked good in the games as he has in practice, but he's brought a lot of leadership. He's playing with incredible timing, and he looks good. And then we've got this might be the best rookie class that the Broncos have had in, I don't know, last couple decades. I mean, it's a phenomenal rookie class. They drafted a wide receiver in Cortland Sutton that I'm telling you right now, he's a name to keep your eye on. He's likely going to be he'll be our jump ball guy by the time it's all said and done. He's 6'4". He catches anything that's thrown within like 5 foot radius of him. Looks really good defensively. Bradley Chubb's playing well. We got an undrafted guy in Philip Lindsay at running back, who's contributing in a major way. I mean, just looks way better than undrafted kid. So there's reason for optimism, John. But I guess we won't really know until about halfway into the season.
Yeah, no doubt. Talk about the combination of Chubb and Miller. How good can that be?
You know, I think that's a lot of excitement because the hope is that kind of takes the Broncos back to the Super Bowl year when I was on the team. And, we had DeMarcus Ware on one side, we had Von Miller on the other, and for play callers on the other side, boy, what do you do? I mean, you send the slide towards DeMarcus Ware, you send the slide towards Von Miller. You got to pick somebody, and you can't pick them both. And so the great hope is that this will free up Von Miller. Last year, Von, he played very, very well. His stat lines were down a little bit as far as the sack numbers go, but teams were able to key in on him. They were able to send the slide his direction every single play, and they were able to truly account for him, and they weren't overly concerned with Shane Ray on the other side. This year, the hope is that Bradley Chubb will really free up Von Miller. You know, if Bradley could walk away at the end of the year and have anywhere between 6 and 8 sacks, I'd call that a successful rookie campaign. And I think he'll get near it. I really do. I think he should get 6 at a minimum. And if he has a fantastic year, maybe he'll creep up to 8 or 9.
Interesting to see how that one's going to go, because again, it's like when you have the pass rushers and do that. I mean, how would you describe the scheme defensively that Vance Joseph has put out there?
Yeah, so it's still very similar to what Wade Phillips was running. Joe Woods was retained by Vance Joseph. He's a carryover from the Gary Kubiak staff. And he's doing a lot of very similar stuff to what Wade Phillips was doing. He might be a little bit more exotic in his blitzing than Wade was, but they're a man coverage team. You know, they like to press those corners up on the line of scrimmage. They like to let their pass rushers do the work for them. I mean, it's a very good pass rush. If you talk about the front seven as a whole, you're talking about the starting group. You got Vaughn on one side, you got Bradley Chubb on the other, you got Derek Wolfe, who's playing defensive end in a 3-4 scheme, and generally speaking, your defensive ends and defensive tackles in a 3-4 scheme, they're not really known as pass rushers, and Derek Wolfe can absolutely get after the quarterback in the pass rush department. He'll walk out at the end of the year, and he'll have a handful of sacks underneath his belt. You got Domantas Peko, the backup outside linebackers are very talented. Shane Ray, Shaq Barrett, those guys would be starting on a lot of teams. So they really like to let their pass rushers do a lot of work for them when it comes to coverage. And then they put their corners in a stressful situation and they make them go man. You know, they lost Aqib Talib, and Bradley Roby was our number 3 corner last year. He'll bump out, be the number 2 guy this year. He's done a fantastic job as a number 3, but it's an entirely different story to go from a number 3 into a full-time starter's role. So I think there's quite a bit of curiosity there. And if there's a couple, maybe, I don't want to call it a weak point, but areas of concern, it would be the new number 3 corner. Tremaine Brock came out from San Francisco, and I think there's a lot of people wondering, can he play at the same level that Bradley Roby did in that role? And then the middle linebackers, you know, that's an area that's been an issue for us for 3 or 4 years now, especially covering tight ends in the pass game. We didn't really change any personnel there. We've got Brandon Marshall and Todd Davis on the inside, and they're very talented linebackers. They, again, they'd start on a lot of teams, but covering out in space is not their specialty.
Yeah, no question. Royce Freeman won the job. First, I was surprised that they cut C.J. Anderson because I thought, I mean, he was one of 9,000 yards back. But I guess in Freeman, more upside with him.
Yeah, I don't think it had as much to do with upside as it just did dollars and cents. You know, C.J. is a very talented running back. You're absolutely right. He's done a lot of great things for the Denver Broncos, but he plays a position that the NFL doesn't like to pay anymore. And when you looked at it, it wasn't just the number. I can't remember the exact number. I want to say it was around 3.5. It wasn't outrageous, but the deal was the dead money was zero. If you cut him, it literally cost the Broncos nothing. So when you get a contract like that, you know, teams are always trying to find ways to free up space in the salary cap. And he was just a very likely target, you know, just based off of the penalty being zero and a reasonable amount of money. But, you know, on to Royce Freeman, Devontae Booker was the starter throughout training camp, and Royce was just named the starter a few days ago. I think the fans and media would have told you that it's been a long time coming. He's definitely looks like the best running back in the group. He came out of Oregon. He had a lot of tread on those tires. I mean, he played a lot of snaps out there in Oregon, and played in a handful of different schemes. You know, he's very patient. He's not too patient. As an offensive lineman, you know, a couple things I would hate for my running backs, guys that made the decision too early and guys that would wait too long to make their decision. I don't want them running up my back if they made it too early, and I don't want them missing the hole if it took them too long. He seems to got the perfect balance there. Not the fastest guy in the world, but he's got a ton of power. He's got decent speed, and so far so good. He's looked really, really good.
Oh, interesting. In Freeman, who does he remind you of? What type of back is he? What style of back? I mean, does he remind you of anybody?
Oh, it's a good question. I'm not sure I've got enough film on him just yet at the NFL level to truly answer that. You know, he had one run in particular, and I don't want to attach this name to him because I don't think their playing styles are overly similar, but he had one run early in the preseason that he was just so patient. He waited, he hit one jump cut, and then he went right up the hole. It was very similar to Le'Veon Bell, the way that he's patient back there. You know, I'm certainly not trying to say he's going to be Le'Veon Bell, but his patience back there reminds me of him. But he's a bigger back at the same time. And so he looks like C.J. Anderson out there. He looks like Devontae Booker out there. Devontae's a bigger back as well. So, you know, take some of those bigger backs in the league that are a little bit of bruisers, not necessarily the fastest guys in the world. You know, they might sneak out for 20 or 25, but it's asking a lot to see them sneak out for 80 yards and outrun all the defensive backs, you know.
Yeah, no doubt. And, of course, I guess the big elephant in the room is the offensive line because it's gone through such a renovation over the last couple of years. How does this line look compared to the last two?
You're right. Yeah, it's been definitely a weak link for the Denver Broncos for a handful of years. Honestly, even going back to the Super Bowl when I was a part of that unit, you know, they had to overcome some hurdles that we were causing. And it's an improved group without a doubt. They brought in Jared Beldier from Arizona, who's going to man the right tackle position for us. He's been in this league for a very long time. I think a large part of the Broncos' success offensively is going to come down to Jared Beldier. I'm not sure if he's going to be amazing or if he's going to be hurt or what it's going to be, because there's been moments in training camp where I thought, boy, you know, you can definitely tell that's a left tackle that's moved over to the right side. He looks a little bit uncomfortable. But during the games, I tell you what, I don't think he gave up a single pressure during the preseason. On the left side, they got Garrett Bowles, who was a rookie last year. And you know, Garrett, he was the second most penalized player in the league last year, so he really hurt us with his penalties. But if you took the penalties aside, which you can't, but if you did, you would say, okay, for a rookie playing left tackle, it was okay. He's got to get better. He's got to continue to improve. But assuming he does and he eliminates those penalties, he's pretty exciting. And then the interior, It's very solid. You got Ron Leary, Matt Paradis, and Connor McGovern. And I think everybody feels good about the inside. So I'd say everyone's cautiously optimistic about the O-line this year.
Yeah. Talk about Bowles, because, I mean, he has such a supreme talent. I know talking to him at the draft and different type of times, he's kind of like almost a Jack Conklin. I mean, not a Jack Conklin, but Taylor Lewan, because he's kind of a colorful quote and all that stuff. But I know he was inconsistent last year in his first year, which is not surprising.
Yeah, you know, Garrett, he's by far the most most athletic tackle that came out of his draft class. I wanted the Broncos to draft him, even above Ryan Ramczyk, who, you know, hindsight being 2020, if you're just judging off their rookie year, Saints got the better end of that deal. But they got a long ways to go in their career. And if Garrett can find a way to translate that athleticism into being a physical player, then he's going to be fantastic. You know, he's not played much football. He'd only played 2 or 3 years of football before he got to the Broncos. Super athletic. He made some dumb penalties. And when I say he was the second most penalized player in the league, it wasn't just effort plays. It wasn't just holding, things like that. I mean, it was personal fouls, false starts, things that just truly were drive killers. I think the great hope here is that, you know, wisen up, get rid of those penalties, continue to improve. You got to play a little bit more physical, and you're going to have a left tackle that you'll keep around for a long time. But only time will tell if he's going to wisen up and get rid of those penalties.
Yeah, no question. And that's going to be the big challenge. Hey, it's going to be great to see you on Sunday. I'm working. Are you working the sidelines or?
Yeah, so I'm the sideline guy on for 850 KOA. We've got the Broncos broadcast, so I'll see you down there.
Yeah, you're stuck with me for 3.5 hours, so because I'll be
that's
there.
Right. Yep.
We'll compare notes.
Yep. Hey, I appreciate you having me on.
Okay. Hey, Tyler Palumbis joining us here on the Venue Kings Hotline. You can check us out on the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, it's Bob Stelton. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
All right, as we head into this big weekend, joining us right now is Bob Stelton. And so, Bob, I guess, you know, the big thing is to kind of get your reaction to the big story by SI that was put together by Greg Bishop, also Robert Klemko, in trying to say, okay, looks like Russell Wilson not the most popular guy by some of the defensive players, and some of the defensive players mad at Pete Carroll for basically, you know, not calling him out when things go wrong.
We kind of knew that, though, right, John?
Yeah,
I mean, I was going to ask you how surprised by any of this you were. Was there anything new that came out that you hadn't already heard or we hadn't sort of speculated on, discussed before?
No, I mean, nothing new, but I think what did come out was that, you know, there is now, you know, it firms up the Seth Wickersham story. And it firms up, you know, why Richard Sherman kind of went different ways. I mean, it took the details of here's Michael Bennett sticking up for Wilson and Sherman almost getting into a fight over that. I think that was probably one of the carryovers that probably affected D. Gordon and them in the Mariner locker room. They're probably having a debate about Russell Wilson for their fantasy team. I was just joking about that. But
you lost me for a moment.
No,
I'm
I know.
Like, wait a minute. Where's John going?
Yeah, just trying to joke on that side. But no, I think that you can see that, you know, but again, you know, I still think it's a little overreaction to say that, you know, it was the demise of the team, but certainly it played a major role. It showed the disharmony and proves the disharmony that was there.
Yeah, and you could see it. You saw it on the sidelines, and it seemed like the theme of the piece was how Pete Carroll would stick up for Russell. I mean, that was just sort of the bottom line to people who haven't read it, that he didn't feel like Russell was going to take the criticism well or take some of the smack talk that these guys would trade back and forth, that ultra-competitive nature, that he shouldn't be a part of it. Maybe he doesn't handle it well, maybe he does. I mean, we don't know. But, you know, Pete sticks up for every one of his players.
Right.
Which player has Pete thrown under the bus? Was it Marshawn Lynch? Was it Richard Sherman acting like a fool on the sidelines, screaming at his coaches, screaming at his teammates, having to be held back? I mean, all that. He stuck up for everybody regardless of what they did. And at times, we fans, media would roll our eyes and go, come on, Pete, really? You're gonna stick up for him when he did this or when he said that. I mean, so it's not unique to Russell by any stretch that he somehow, you know, took up the flag for Russell, but the rest of us were left to fend for ourselves. I'm sorry, not buying it.
Yeah, but tell me, it's like, you know, and that's why I think it gets unfair to Pete. You know, what's the purpose in calling? Because again, you have to. I mean, you know, is that going to hurt Russell Wilson? Because I mean, there's been times, at least in press conferences, he says, "Nope, Russell needs to do better in this, needs to do better in that." I mean, what's he supposed to do? Is the idea that he's supposed to rip your quarterback?
I guess holding him accountable in some sense. You know, according to the story, that when Russell made mistakes, he wasn't held accountable the way other players were. And to me, I kind of read it going, well, when you've got a star quarterback, whether it's him, whether it's Aaron Rodgers, whether it's Big Ben, whether it's Tom Brady, they get treated differently. Right. That's kind of how it's always been, whether you think it's fair or not. You go in understanding the quarterback is treated differently. You watch how they act in Hard Knocks. Don't touch the quarterback. What are you doing? They're screaming at each other because the quarterback was touched in practice. They are different. They have a different value to the team. That's how it is. That's mm-hmm. how it's always been.
No, and that's the reality of it. That's why, you know, I guess that's the surprise, is that why would, you know, the players kind of linger on that? I mean, I know that it's a competitive nature. You want to win everything. But, you know, isn't a quarterback like Russell Wilson, I mean, sure, he's going to make mistakes, but isn't he the one that can kind of make things right at the end? I mean, he's got more wins, I think, than anybody but Tom Brady since coming into the league, you know, since 2012. I mean, he's got great comeback ability. I still use the stat from last year. Could you imagine if Russell didn't come in? I mean, the team was minus 44 in the first three quarters as far as their point differential. Thanks to Russell Wilson, was plus 78 in the fourth quarter, best in the league. And that got them over the top to win 9. And were it not for Blair Walsh and a few other things, they might have won 11 or 12.
Yeah, it was just, it's weird to hear. And I mean, they're human beings that spend a lot of time around each other with really different extreme personalities. You're going to have conflict. That doesn't surprise me.
No.
Just the fact that somehow they viewed it as this unique situation, and it's why things fell apart. It wasn't anything other than he wasn't held accountable, or he was treated differently than others. I'm thinking, on what team is that not true? Mm-hmm. On what team, especially with a franchise guy? I'm not talking Case Keenum with the Broncos. With all due respect to Case, he's not an elite level quarterback, a franchise quarterback. In what franchise quarterback system is that not the case? I just didn't get it. And he is different. The quarterback is different. He's got a different value. He's the most important player on that team. Sorry, cornerback. Sorry, wide receiver. Sorry, defensive ends. The quarterback is the most important. He's got the ball in his hands every single snap of that offense. He's got more control over the outcome of that game than any single player on that roster. Yeah, and that's true in every system.
And that's why I just kind of wonder, it's like, why carry that through? And again, I guess it's the competitive nature of the defensive guys, that particularly like a Richard Sherman and that, doing that. But, you know, it's one where you don't have to love the quarterback. I mean, again, he's the one who can do it. I mean, I still go back to Ben Roethlisberger. There was a lot of guys, particularly, maybe not as much now, but early in the career, that just didn't like the guy. Hines Ward was never a big guy in being in the Ben Roethlisberger corner. But, you know, as long as you win, then it's fine. And they won, and Russell Wilson wins.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if not for Russell, you didn't have a good defense last year. You had a really mediocre defense last year. You had an atrocious offensive line and an absent running game, and your quarterback led the league in touchdown passes. And if not for him, you're probably looking at a 5-win team. I mean, right. It's just, he is that important. Whether you like, you don't have to like him. They don't have to hang out and go to parties with each other and give each other Christmas gifts, but that's the guy that's in control of your destiny as a team. He's got mm-hmm. more control than any other player on that team. It's just the nature of the position. So the sort of jealousy or the backbiting that goes on, again, I don't quite understand it, because it's not unique here. It's that way in every situation in the NFL, and has been. This is not new.
Right. That's like, but again, it's part of the reality. So how bad do you think it was in the locker room? Because again, I mean, the portraits over the time, it makes it look like it was pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, we heard whispers, John. I mean, you and I were in there after, you know, I was at all the home games. You were on the road too, so you'd have a better sense of it. I think they did a nice job of sort of quelling that when the media was in there. If there was a ton of tension, I didn't really sense it when I was in there, and maybe you got a different vibe, but it's hard to say. If you've got teammates, you know, coming close to blows over how they feel about another player, that's bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's divisive. And I think, you know, there were players, whether it was Richard Sherman, whether it was Michael Bennett or anybody else, that were undermining Pete Carroll, the head coach, you know, and they look at Russell as an extension of the head coach. So it just, you know, I don't know. He'd, the taking issue with Pete sticking up for his franchise quarterback I take issue with that because he stuck up for every player on that right. team, regardless of the dumb thing they did or said.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't see him throwing people under the bus. So what's on Bob Gras and Tom today?
Well, we'll obviously get into this story. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about it with a guy named John Clayton at 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And then we'll talk some Mariners. Mariners get back to business. The New York Yankees are in town, which means the stadium will be packed with Yankees fans, of course. And we'll talk to Mike Blowers. He'll join us at 1 o'clock.
Okay, that sounds good. That's Bob Gras and Tom coming up next. I'll be back tomorrow from 9 until 12, and then back on Monday at 10. Thanks, Amora Dooley, for producing the show and doing everything. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.